Welcome to Midnight Harmony. I'm your host, E.W. Helmick. I want to begin tonight's broadcast with a story. Several years ago, my sons and I swam Australia's longest river, the River Murray, in an attempt to inspire the youth of Australia and bring awareness to the high rate of suicide in that nation. The swim was 2,400 kilometers and took us 4 months to complete. Upon completion, we created a documentary called Take Your Dream, which is now available on Amazon Prime. The film garnered numerous awards around the world, to include Best Inspirational Film, Best Australian Intercontinental Film, and Best Editing, among many more. During the initial public presentations of the film, we had a chance to show it to a group in Oregon. About 40 persons attended the screening. One of those, an individual who refused to take off his sunglasses as he was seated in the front row. I thought it was a bit odd that someone would sit through a movie with sunglasses, but passed it off as the film began. I watched this individual intently during the film because he seemed disengaged, like he wasn't particularly interested in the film, as he looked around the darkened room. At the end of the film, I was invited up to answer any questions the audience had. This young man was the first to raise his hand. I acknowledged him with a "yes, sir," in the front row. He said, "What a beautiful film and stunning portrayal of what others can do to inspire someone else. Everyone should see this film." I thanked him and took a few more questions. As the screening was adjourned, I stood in the back of the room thanking the guests who attended. This young man approached me, but was holding on to another man's arm. Then I realized, in one hand, he was holding on to the other man's arm. In the other, he had a white cane. This man was blind. The only man in the audience who verbally stated, "Everyone should see this film," hadn't seen the film, but instead experienced it in a way no one else in the room had. He simply listened to the story unfold, and from that 90 minutes, concluded it was beautiful, inspiring, and everyone should see it. It is my privilege to introduce my listeners to my good friend, Jeff Dunn, here tonight on Midnight Harmony. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Jeff, for me, that night began a realization that life is worth living, and it takes courage to live a life worth living. A movie I watched recently had a quote, "Courage is fear prayed over." It's worth applying that idea to life, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Jeff, what do you remember about that night when we showed the movie? What resonated most with you when you watched the film?
Most, I guess, maybe just your dedication to, you know, and the desire to reach other people.
Our film talks a lot about dreams and following your dreams to uncover the passion God has laid on your heart. What were your dreams when you were a child?
Well, there were two dreams. My great-granddad had a ranch, and so we were always up there, you know, riding horses and stuff and helping him with the cattle. And so I wanted to be a cowboy at one point, but I also played baseball, so I wanted to be a professional baseball player. Those were my two dreams.
Did you have any time to play out either one of those as you were growing up, the cowboy one especially?
Well, like I said, we actually even got to live out at the ranch for a year when we were having our place built in Rios and Reesport, and his property was about 17 miles out of town up in the hills in a valley. So we got to spend, like I said, a year up there when I was in third grade. So that was pretty great. And so I guess I got to live out the life of living on a ranch with horses and cattle, I guess, in a way. And that's kind of what got my interest sparked in it, you know, being around my great granddad. And that's all he did, live as a rancher, basically. And so, and then as far as baseball, I played baseball every year from kindergarten until high school. So
do you still enjoy baseball, or do you still enjoy things of the old West?
I like listening to baseball games. I tell people, I'm going to watch TV, and they'll say, "You mean you're going to listen to it?" And I'm like, "Nope. I can see it in my mind, and I know exactly what their uniforms look like." So they talk about the whole thing and describe it, so I can see it in my mind.
That's great. Describe for me and my listeners the relationship between you and your mother and father at a young age.
Well, it was great. I remember when I was really little, you know, from I can remember all the way back to kindergarten, first grade, even, and going to church, you know, three times on Sunday and once on Wednesday, or for my parents when they were in the choir in the church and stuff, very involved. It was just pretty great until I was 8 and dad decided he didn't want to be married anymore. So that's when things took a downhill course.
Did that impact you? I mean, at 8 years old, that I would think that would be a pretty tragic thing for an 8 year old.
Oh yeah, it was devastating to me. I mean, me and my dad were like best friends. You know, he played college baseball, and so he was really into it, but, you know, really involved with me playing. But I don't know, we were really close. And then when he didn't want to be married anymore and said he'd be around, you know, which would have been great, but then he moved out of state, didn't see him for quite a while and just get phone calls at Christmas and birthdays. So that was pretty hard.
You lived with your mom then?
Yeah, I did. And then she remarried a couple of years ago, and I got a stepdad that I didn't really want, you know, I wanted my dad to be there. And so that caused some issues.
And did you have siblings?
Yeah, I've got one brother that's 11 months older and a brother that's 13 months younger. That's smashed right in the middle.
Okay. You loved the West, you loved the ranching, you loved baseball. Is there something else that you wanted to be when you grew up, or did those things fit the bill? Was there something else that you were hoping to aspire to as you got older and into adulthood that you really wanted to go for?
Not really. I kind of lost interest in most things and then got involved with the wrong people at the end of eighth grade. And that's when stuff really took a downward turn, because I'd played baseball all the way up until then. And well, because of my extracurricular activities, I didn't qualify to play high school ball anymore, so couldn't play for the team.
But your grandfather at a young age was still even after your father left, your grandfather still played a big part in your life as a young man. Is that right?
No, he passed away when I was 8, right before my dad left.
Okay. So some really tragic things when you were young that were really important to you.
Right. The thing that affected me the most was my dad leaving, though. That really affected me and put me in a downward spiral. I was pretty much, I think I was, looking back now, I think I rebelled as kind of passive aggressive, I guess, you know, not doing things just to show how I felt about stuff, I guess, maybe. That was pretty difficult, you know.
So how old would you have been? Eighth grade, you're saying?
Well, he left when I was in third, but by the time eighth grade came around, I really started rebelling.
And
she remarried when I was in fifth grade, but things were okay for the first couple of years.
Okay. And at that point in your life, you began down a dark path that you've kind of hinted toward, and it eventually led to a significant event in your life. But before we talk about that event, what were other causes of you to go down this path of darkness, the wrong path, as you kind of stated, and get yourself into trouble? You hinted obviously that your father, but what were some other things that were leading you down that path?
Well, the thing that triggered it the most, I remember the day when my best friend was over at his house. It was summertime, like I said, after eighth grade. We were hanging out, and he's like, "Hey, I know where my mom's boyfriend stashes his marijuana. You want to try it?" And I was like, "Okay." So I tried it. All those feelings, you know, that I'd had, it kind of put me in a different zone. It took me away from all the feelings, you know, and I didn't really feel anything at all, which was like, hey, that's different. And unfortunately, that led into my high school year, my freshman year, and I made new friends. And unfortunately, they were all doing that. So I ended up taking a lot of my freshman classes over in my sophomore and junior year, but I eventually graduated. It just took an extra few months.
So it wasn't loneliness, because you had, as you hinted, friends, maybe not the right, you hadn't attracted the right type of friends into your life. But you weren't necessarily lonely, and it wasn't necessarily a lack of hope. It was the marijuana was very significant in your life and just kind of heading you down that path of falling behind in school and falling behind in life a little bit. Is that right?
Right. And then not caring much about a lot of things. You know, I lost interest in a lot of stuff. Like I lost interest in baseball and everything else, you know, and like I said, made new friends that weren't doing the right things. And so eventually got in a lot of trouble and had to go live with my grandparents in 10th grade down in California, because my stepdad didn't want me in the house with my attitude and the way stuff I was doing. So, but that was a great year. So, and then I had to come back.
And The year with your grandparents in California, did things seem to level out a little bit for you, or you had to go
completely.
Back? Okay.
No, it completely leveled out there because my grandparents are devoted Christians, you know, and everyone read the Bible, you know, before when I was waiting for the bus to pick me up to go to the high school. And, you know, and then of course, like I said, they were three times on Sunday or two times on Sunday and once during the week I was in church. And they, like I said, they were devoted to put God first. My grandpa was a very great example of that, more than anybody I've ever met. He put God first in everything, you know? And so it really changed my life. That year was pretty awesome. And I got my grade point average was really high in my sophomore year. But then when I got done with it, graduated there, mom picked me up the day after I graduated from 10th grade and brought me back home. And it didn't take long. I was like, in June? And then a couple weeks after Christmas, I was a few minutes late and I'd been not following all the rules about, you know, timing and different stuff, curfew, and walked up to the door and it was locked, knocked on it. And I opened it and my stepdad handed me a duffel bag, says, "You don't live here." So I spent my junior and senior year staying with friends and stuff. Well, after my junior year, one of my friend's moms told me that, and she knew I couldn't pay rent. She says, "But as long as you'll finish school, you can live here." So I did that and graduated, which is pretty great. It was rough.
So you're not living on the street, but you're not living in a friendly home environment either. So you're living with friends in your junior.
And I was kind of, the kids call it couch surfing.
Yeah.
Couple weeks here, a couple weeks there, you know. Luckily I had friends and parents that would let me do that until my friend's mom offered to let me stay there for my senior year.
And upon graduation, did you have any hopes, any dreams, or were you at a point that you were just desperate for anything at that point? Or what happened next after high school, right after?
Well, actually, I actually contacted my dad. He had moved up to Washington and I had lived with him since I was a little kid. But I said, "Dad, I need to get out of here." And he said, "Well, come on up." And my friend, another friend of mine, said he didn't have anything to do for the weekend. So we drove up to Olympia, Washington, and I stayed with him. And then I ended up going and working construction with him for a while, and then went into Job Corps and met a young lady. And we ended up, when I graduated from there, we got married and we had the same past. So that didn't work out too well. We ended up having two daughters, but, you know, it was an off and on relationship because of different things.
How long were you in the Job Corps?
About a year and a half before I graduated.
The only thing substantial, Jeff, in your life at this time then is you've got a gal that you guys fell in love, but because your pasts had very, very similar processes in it, that fell apart fairly quickly. How long were you married?
We were actually legally married for like 7 years, but there was a lot of separations in the middle of that, you know, so probably a total of 5 and a half, maybe, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How old? I guess let me ask this. I hinted earlier just towards this significant event in your life. At what point after the Job Corps, at what point after separating with your wife, did you eventually decide life was not worth living? Again, this is the event I alluded to earlier. What was the deciding factor when you tried to take your own life?
I thought things were going pretty good, and we were both taking classes at the community college here, and I was working also. She had another affair, and it just, you know, and then some. One night when she was intoxicated, kind of came after me violently and went to jail for the weekend. And when she got out, I was like, you know, I can't do this, you know. And I had two daughters that were 3 and 5, but I had promised them that I wasn't going to do what my dad did. I didn't know what to do, but I was like, I can't stay here and let them see this, you know, over and over again. And so I told her we needed to separate. Well, I didn't want to. I wanted to be I wanted to be a dad and husband. Well, that put me into a downward spiral, and I started drinking every night just so I could sleep. The best part of my day would be go to work. You know, I'd moved out of town about 50 miles away to another city so that I could get a job. And, but like I said, I was, the only way I could sleep at night was just to get drunk, you know, or at least to get partway there to where I could get tired. When I'd wake up in the morning, I'd feel great because I'd be going to work, and I'd feel great all day until I got off work. And then my mind had nothing to do but think about them. One time she came down and brought the girls so I could see them. We spent the day together, you know, all of us. And that was pretty great. And then she left. And then about a month later, I guess it was, I went up to visit. Since I had totaled my pickup, I went up and stayed at mom and dad's, where or my mom and my stepdad's. And well, she came by, and I was, and she had actually moved in with somebody. I forgot, right after we separated, when I left, she moved in with another guy, and it was kind of obvious they had been seeing each other before that, because it was like the very next day. Well, I told her, I said, hey, why don't you and your girlfriend, you know, she was the babysitter for my girls, why don't you guys come down to the, it was like a local little club there, you know, and I'll buy you a drink, it's ladies' night. So she said, okay. Well, I went down there, and I was highly intoxicated by the time I got there, and she showed up about an hour later, but she showed up with her boyfriend, not her girlfriend. And so that, you know, and I was very intoxicated. And so that put me, you know, in an attitude, but luckily I didn't get mad. But I was getting sad, you know, kind of irritated. So I went outside to have a cigarette, and then they came out. I guess he thought I was going to mess with his pickup is what I was told. And then they went to go move his truck, I guess. And well, earlier that day when I was drunk, I'd went down to the pawn shop and I bought a 38 special pistol. And when they walked off, I just remember saying, you're not going to hurt me anymore. And I don't remember it. It seems like I said, God forgive me, I'm not sure, but I put the gun to my head and I pulled the trigger, but it didn't go off. And I only know that because there was a bullet with the primer had a dent in it, but it didn't shoot. And that bullet and the gun were brand new that day. So I pulled the hammer back and I fired again, and it went right through my temple behind my eyes and severed my optic nerve. But I think I can only think that God got involved and stopped that first bullet, because it might have went through my brain.
Was your wife still there with her boyfriend when you pulled the trigger?
Yeah, they were in his truck backing out.
So she would have been part of potentially the recovery effort of someone trying to help you after you shot yourself, because I'm assuming you went unconscious, or?
Well, yeah, I don't remember. That was on May 18th, which it's funny, I can remember really well. So 2000, it was the 20th anniversary of when Mount St. Helens erupted on the exact day. So I don't know anything until July 4th, when my mom was actually able to, I was able to get into a wheelchair. They helped me get into one, and then took me in the car, and she said, well, it's 4th of July this week, and so if you hear a bunch of, you know, she didn't know if that was going to affect me with, you know, pops and explosions. And I'm like, okay, no worries, you know.
So but you were
I was highly medicated because of the swelling in my brain, you know, because of the traumatic brain injury.
How long were you actually in the hospital for after this event then?
Well, I was in the hospital there at OHSU, the big hospital in Portland, for 6 months or so. And then I was paralyzed on my left side. Like I said, it severed my optic nerves. And so I ended up in the hospital in Portland for about, I think they say it was about 6 months there, and then another year at a physical rehab place.
Okay.
So I was paralyzed on my left side, couldn't move it. And then one day I was laying on my bed and I went to cross my legs, and instead of reaching down and moving my leg, I just lifted it up and crossed it over. And my grandparents were there and they saw it happen. And they pointed out to me, because I didn't realize it, because I was still medicated quite a bit. And then they let the nurses know. And so they started getting me up and walking a little bit, you know, with help, and then moved me to a physical rehab hospital so I could learn how to use my leg and arm again and strengthen up a little bit. So I spent about a year and a half there.
So you're having some rehab, but even before that, how long was it when you became conscious that you realized you had tried to take your own life and you were still alive? Was that...
Well, that's funny, you know, because I used to ask the doctor, I'd asked him multiple times when I was in OHSU, I said, when am I going to see again? And they say, you're not. And I'd say, okay, thanks. You know, but I was so medicated, it didn't even register. And then when I moved down to Salem, my grandpa, he was only, you know, 30 miles away. So he used to come up all the time and he'd be reading the Bible to me and talking to me, you know. And so that was pretty great, because they were lightening up my medication and I was starting to be able to concentrate on stuff, you know, and be coherent. I just remember one day my best friend, the guy that actually gave me the marijuana, you know, when I was 10 years old, because we became still best friends, you know, and he called me up. I guess mom had let him know where I was, and he called up and he said, hey, how's it going? I said, oh, hey, what's up? And, you know, I said, I'm in the hospital. He knew. He said, yeah, I know. And then I said, yeah, I shot myself. He says, yeah, I know. And then I said the words I said, and I said, I'm going to be blind the rest of my life. And it just broke out. I just started crying, you know, and then he got off the phone, and I stopped crying for a while, you know, and I just the Lord didn't speak audibly. He just gave me some peace, though, and said, you know, you're here because I want you here, you know, and you're going to, because I was like, how am I going to live being blind when I couldn't even do it being sighted? He's like, don't worry about it. I'm going to do it with you. You're going to be fine.
You've hinted before many times about your grandfather in conversations that we've had. And I know there's about a 60-second video clip that's a promo that we've used for our film and that you had made. And I know that you share that with some different groups, Celebrate Recovery and others. And it's just your story in a very, very brief clip. But you mentioned your grandfather in that as well, who loved the Lord and came and read the Bible at your side. Tell me a little bit about him and about that and about your relationship. Is he still living, or just talk us through?
Well, he passed away last year, actually.
Okay.
So, but yeah, we had a very close relationship. And I remember him saying he was really proud of me because the way the Lord had changed me, you know, and I was telling, well, yeah, God's done a great job. You know, he's made me a person that I'm actually proud of myself now. You know, proud of what I'm doing and what I've done. You know, I'm working with people in recovery, like you had mentioned, Celebrate Recovery. I helped start that group here and been doing that for 8 years now. And I was going into the prison for 7 years until COVID shut it down to volunteers. But I'm just, the Lord put that on my heart for other people. I don't want anybody to make the same decisions I, you know, made with drugs and alcohol and end up in the same position. The Lord's using that. I've been able to talk to lots of people and got a lot of great feedback from it.
What would you say to your wife and to your children today, to your two daughters? What would you say to them today?
Well, I talk to them almost every day. I have five grandkids now, actually. It's kind of funny that everything started so long ago, and now, you know, it's hard to believe that I can say, yeah, I remember back in high school. I was in high school 30 years ago. That's crazy. I don't know. I don't feel that old, and I don't look that old. People still think I'm like 35 or 40 at the most.
So you have a good relationship with your daughters, yes?
Oh, it's great. Yeah, it's fantastic, actually. Yeah. My older daughter, she only lives about a mile and a half away, and my younger daughter, she might live 2 miles away, so... But because of her schedule, I don't get to see her much. My older daughter, I see her all the time. She'll be here this afternoon, actually, so.
So your mom is still living?
Yep. She also lives only about, I don't know, 2 miles away, possibly, you know, yeah.
And what about your stepfather? Is he still living?
Nope. He passed away from cancer about 5 years ago. Well, the one that I grew up with, that's a funny story, is, yeah, he's still living. He lives about 90 miles away, but he and I have reconciled, and I don't know if it's because he's not trying to raise me anymore, but we're friends, and I talk to him probably at least every other week, sometimes weekly. And I went down and stayed with him and his wife for like 3 days last summer. It's pretty amazing. And the Lord's touched him. And, you know, he kind of, when I was growing up, be a Christian on Sunday, but not the rest of the week. But now the Lord's touched him, and he's a completely different person. It was wonderful being down around him. It was great. First thing he does, gets up in the morning, goes into a room and reads the Bible and prays. And, you know, it's just fantastic. Him and his wife, they are very involved with their church and a home group. And I don't know, it's pretty amazing seeing how God's touched him, you know, and amazing how our relationship is different, you know, because I apologized to him for being such a turkey when I was little. And then he said, don't worry about it. You know, and he apologized to me for not realizing what I really needed. So, but like I said, we're close now, and that's pretty great. And I also have a relationship with my dad, my biological dad. We're getting closer. Well, I mean, we're close, I guess, but, you know, he's a little different still, I guess.
Jeff, I love your story, because here's the story from my perspective, and I think probably the perspective, I hope, from my listeners. You are blind. You live alone. You're no longer married. You were separated from your father, from your stepfather, through all kinds of different situations and circumstances, separated from your children, and yet there has been great, great reconciliation with all of those individuals in your life. You already said it, but you've been happy ever since that point that you realized you were going to be blind the rest of your life, and you poured out your tears, and you just trusted the Lord. So your happiness and your joy, that stems from knowing Christ and the influence he's had in your life.
100%. I mean, I wouldn't, I've told people before, I wouldn't trade my sight if I had to lose what I have with the Lord at all. If I had, because I have to go back, you know, to being sighted, I wouldn't trade it for the happiness I have now, because I'm, and some people are like, wow. I'm like, well, you know, my life is fantastic. You know, I'm just happy all the time and it's great. I wouldn't want to give that up for anything. I don't need to see. Like I tell people, I can see in color when I'm dreaming.
Amen.
And, you know, and that there's that song that says, open the eyes to my heart. And he did. I care about other people more than I ever have before. And that's pretty great.
What would you say to someone on our program tonight that is struggling with thoughts of suicide right now?
Well, I think I would say to reach out to someone, and if they feel like there isn't anybody, well, there always is somebody, and at least reach out maybe even to a local church and see if there's someone there that could talk to you a little bit. And even if they, you don't want to get involved with God, at least they could, you know, maybe give you a little bit of hope. And because no matter how bad it is, it can be better, and the Lord can bring you through it. I promise that, because he can bring us through anything. If you make a decision to try to take your own life, kill yourself, well, it's over if it works. But if it doesn't work, you could end up something paralyzed, or anything could happen if it doesn't work. That's miserable. Like I said, I've had a headache for 20 years. You know.
If someone wanted to talk with you or invite you to their church or organization to speak, I know you're available to do that. Is it all right if they reach you through me on my program here, so that if somebody wants to reach
absolutely,
out?
Absolutely, yeah. And I would love to do it. If I could get to where they're at, I would love to. That'd be great.
Yeah, great. I've heard Jeff's story several times, and he has some really great resources. And if you're interested in having Jeff speak in your church or in a program that you operate, I would really encourage you to get in touch with us, and we'll share that information so you can do that. Jeff, how would you describe hope?
Well, hope is knowing that, well, from my personal experience, is that hope is that I know that God has brought me through the stuff that I chose to do before. And I know that no matter what I face in the future, he's going to bring me through it. It doesn't matter what it is, because I know that I've faced a larger mountain than most people have and came out on top. And so I'm just looking forward to the future and know that you know, this earth is not my final place. Some people think you just live for 80 years to die and get stuck in the dirt. That's pretty depressing. I know that's not going to happen. So, I guess, like I said, my hope is not like, oh, I hope I get a Christmas present. It's more of a faith, and I know that I'm going to be fine and my future is going to be great. And if I face anything, he'll bring me through it.
Amen.
And, you know, you were talking about speaking. I've been able to speak to multiple high schools, and, you know, since it's public schools, I did speak to one private school and I was able to talk about God. But the other ones, I can tell my story about, you know, the mistakes I made and choices I made, and the wrong people that I chose to hang around with, and how that led me to using drugs and going downhill and everything else and messing up my life. That's been pretty great.
Jeff's story is a story of hope and reconciliation, of incredible courage and incredible overcoming. And so again, I would encourage anyone that wants to know more, get in touch with us and we'll put you in touch with Jeff. But if you'd like to have Jeff speak publicly at your organization, church, or school, we would love to facilitate getting you in touch with him and doing that. Jeff, it's an incredible blessing to know you. I'm so privileged that my family is able to call you friend. Your story is an incredible inspiration. Just knowing you has really moved us, and even moved our own lives just in a pathway of inspiration and courage. So I really appreciate that, and I really appreciate you taking time to be on the program tonight.
Well, thanks. There's two more things I wanted to say, if I could share real quick.
Absolutely.
One thing is,
please.
I don't refer to this as my testimony. I refer to this as God's testimony that he's given me to share with other people. And also, when I was talking about, you know, people who might not think that they have someone in their life that doesn't care, or anybody that, you know, they could turn to. Well, like Eric, I've been talking to here, and myself, I'm always available. You could get my number from Eric and 24 hours a day, call me, and I care. I'll be there for you, you know, and I'd be willing to listen and talk to you.
Amen. Amen. Jeff, thank you very much. I've chosen to share Jeff's story here tonight on our program because I know several things about those who are listening. Everyone needs hope and help at some point in their life. If that is you tonight, you ask Jesus for help by asking him into your life. It's as simple as saying, Jesus, I believe in you. I trust you. I believe you are the resurrected Christ. Come into my life. And he will. Oftentimes, we need the reassurance that we're on the right path, and there are others who know how we feel and what we feel. If that is you tonight, I want to make certain you have all the resources you need right now to make the right decision and to know someone is listening and someone cares about you. This information is also in the description of this podcast, along with the link to the film Take Your Dream. If you have an emergency situation or crisis, please call 911 immediately. If you want to know more about a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, there are coaches available to talk with you right now at www.jesuscares.com. Simply click the Chat Now button and you will be connected with a coach. That's www.jesuscares.com. You can also go to www.moretomorrowsne.org. It's More Tomorrows Nebraska. Again, that website is www.moretomorrowsne.org, where you will find numerous resources for yourself and others who are struggling with thoughts of suicide. If that is you tonight, I encourage you to call 988. That is the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Again, that number is 988. This is a 24-hour hotline that is open 7 days a week, every day of the year. Your call is confidential and free of charge. You will hear a message saying that you have reached the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. You will hear music while your call is being connected. You will be helped by a skilled, trained crisis counselor who will listen to you and tell you about services that are available in your area. If that is you tonight, I encourage you to call. Satan came into the world to steal, kill, and destroy. It seems everything these days points towards the destruction of good, growing deceit, and unending bad news. Jesus came into the world to serve, heal, and save. You are worth saving, my friend, and so much more. I believe this so much that I've left my number in the description of tonight's broadcast, along with my email address. If you want to comment on tonight's broadcast, tell me about your invitation to let Jesus into your life, or need encouragement and someone to talk with, you can do so. Call me. I am so glad you joined us tonight. My prayer is that you find hope in Jeff's story and courage to fight for your life or someone else's tonight. God bless you. God keep you. Godspeed, my friend.